This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. We hope you had a joyous Christmas or a relaxing day or two off or whatever it was for you. 2017, the year of Donald Trump, is drawing to a close now. It's another few weeks before the old, reliable January 20th lookbacks on the one-year anniversary of the Trump presidency. But we're going to spend the next few days now looking back at 2017 through a few different lenses. Tomorrow, we'll look at the media, and today, 2017 in sports. Now, we're not talking about scores and championships. The big sports story of 2017 was activism and protest.
We must confront systemic oppression as a doctor would a disease. You identify it, you call it out, you treat it, and you defeat it.
That's Colin Kaepernick, the currently unsigned former quarterback with the San Francisco 49ers, accepting an award this month from the ACLU of Southern California. Colin Kaepernick first took a knee to protest the treatment of people of color in the United States back in 2016. But that protest started a wave of similar protests in 2017 across football and into the rest of the sports world. Jelani Cobb is a staff writer for The New Yorker. He writes about race and politics, history and culture. And he says the central figure in this wave of sports protests is the president, Donald Trump.
The biggest moment, without even thinking too much, is the point at which the president of the United States referred to NFL players who were protesting as SOBs.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
That turned a relatively small affair into a widespread, league-wide protest movement. And so I think that was probably going to stand out in any given year, or really just in kind of sports history in general.
The president really endeavored to make this a defining moment for identity in this country. What do you think he was saying?
Well, I mean, I think it's not that far of a stretch to say that he was kind of manipulating the politics of resentment here from the outside. The players themselves, they seem to be articulating a particular type of solidarity with, communities and individuals who have been on the receiving end of excessive force from police and the broader inequalities in the criminal justice system, generally speaking. And on the outside, there are people who see them as coddled, ungrateful black millionaires. And I think that the fact that, they're black millionaires is salient there, and that's part of this equation. And so he was manipulating those kinds of resentments and anxieties that people have, especially as they related to a community that people hold some pre-existing biases toward.
Still, let's hold the players to account, too, because they do have a platform. Could they have done more, do you think, to prevent their protest from sort of slipping away from becoming about the flag or about the military? And could they have done more to keep the focus where they wanted it to be on communities of color?
I think it's hard to say. And the reason I say that it's hard to say is that, one of the things that I think would have been strategically probably significant would have been to issue a list of concerns that were directly connected to these protests. Because absent that, absent a kind of document or, overarching statement, then it becomes a kind of Rorschach test where people can look at it and interpret it to be whatever they want it to be. But outside of that, in the media landscape that we're in right now, we've seen things that are, very explicitly clear that have become muddy because of, how media operates and the kind of cognitive biases that have become a bigger part of American culture and American society and suspicions and partisanship and all those other things that we've been shaking our heads about for the course of the year. So could football players achieve something that even, political figures, seasoned political figures and media professionals have had a hard time achieving? I'm not entirely sure they could.
And going up against the loudest microphone in the United States, if not the world, is no small task. I mean, that's what made the president's involvement in this debate so very different.
Right. We shouldn't forget about that. And one of the other things I think that we even overlooked in the midst of this was disinviting the NBA champion Golden State Warriors from the White House visit. And this is something that we see. It's just kind of a given that, when someone wins the Super Bowl or they win the NBA championship, there'll be a photo op of that team, with the president, at some point afterward. And that didn't happen. And it just went to the point of, I think, the way in which so much of American culture and American popular culture in particular has become political in the last 18 months. And so that was, I thought, pretty notable as well this year.
And you're describing how these protests, still just sticking to the sports world, went way beyond football to the NBA, especially when it came to those White House visits. Here was LeBron James, probably the most famous basketball player in America. Sorry, Steph Curry, but he probably is. Here's what he had to say back in September.
I'm not going to let, while I have this platform, to let one individual, no matter the power, no matter the impact that he should have or she should have, ever use sport as a platform to divide us.
Jelani, this isn't the first era in our American history when professional athletes have protested. It's not the first time that black athletes have used their platforms to protest. But it's the first time in a long time, and I wonder if it's the Trump phenomenon. I wonder if it's President Trump himself that is bringing all these black athletes now to the fore, because it's not always this way.
No, it's not. And it's very difficult, I think, to find any space outside of this. And, you know, certainly I don't think that Trump was unaware of how his commentary would be taken. And so I think that people have had very little breathing room, very little room to be neutral. And I also don't want to overlook the impact that Colin Kaepernick has had in this, because, you know, when he began, you know, this protest, this was a, you know, isolated thing with, you know, himself and, you know, one other player from the 49ers. And then in his absence for this entire year, which has been obviously the most conspicuous absence in professional sports this year, the principle of the movement that he tried to represent has become a much bigger phenomenon, even without him physically being present. And, you know, it reminded me, a lot of people said it reminded them of Muhammad Ali, you know, when he refused to go to Vietnam and subsequently was unable to box, lost his boxing license. It also reminded me of another situation, which was in 1969, when Curt Flood, a baseball player for the St. Louis Cardinals, refused a trade. And at that point in time, you know, baseball players could be traded over their own objections. And he refused a trade to the Philadelphia Phillies and said that, you know, he was not a set of consumer goods that could just be pawned off wherever the management chose to.
You're a man who makes $90,000 a year, which isn't exactly slave wages. What's your retort to that?
A well-paid slave is nonetheless a slave.
He wound up sitting out the 1970 season, baseball season, for that reason. And in his absence, the case around him and what the rights of players would be built and built and built. And you saw that same kind of phenomenon. And so there's a point which you can see people having an even bigger impact in their absence than possibly they have in their presence.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Curt Flood, because I wanted to mention baseball. Major League Baseball was a place where the take a knee protest, if I can use a shorthand, weren't entirely absent, but largely absent, one or two players. But then there was an incident at Fenway Park, Red Sox baseball, where Baltimore Orioles outfielder Adam Jones was subject to racial epithets, the N-word, from Boston fans. Here's Adam Jones.
And just things like this, they just don't they don't have a place in the game. I mean, I thought we've moved past that a long time ago, but obviously with what's going on in the, you know, in the real world, things like this, people are outraged and speaking up at an alarming rate, and it's unfortunate that I had to be involved with it.
Adam Jones of the Baltimore Orioles, Jelani Cobb, he's not a protester, he's not an activist, he's a ball player, and he got pulled right into this with plenty of recriminations to follow in Boston.
There were two narratives around this. You know, one was, I think, the kind of shock and outrage that people had rightly that this incident occurred. And the other was a kind of jaded cynicism that was not only kind of not surprised that it occurred, but not surprised that it happened in Boston. But I will say that it was notable that, you know, maybe 2 months before this happened, I was talking with a good friend who's involved with, you know, lots of great causes and involved in many ways in trying to reconcile conflict between groups of people, and, you know, as a nonviolent activist. And he's a native Bostonian, and he said that he was really shocked to hear that Boston had a kind of reputation for punching above its weight class, so to speak, when it came to racism. And it's an idea that I think is very common among many African Americans, but maybe not as well known among white Bostonians.
Well, look, Jelani Cobb, 2017 is going to be remembered in the annals of sports and sports protest as a hot year. Donald Trump isn't always going to be president. Do you think once he leaves the scene that sports are going to retreat just back to the action on the field and on the ice and take this step back from activism?
I think it's really hard to know because there is this long lineage. You know, if we are thinking about, you know, people like Ali and people like Kurt Flood and also like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Althea Gibson, and certainly people who have had their identities and their status as citizens very much connected to what they did on the field. Arthur Ashe, you know, would be another. And so what will come of this? I don't know. But I certainly think that at this particular moment, it's worth noting that we haven't seen anything quite like this in a really long time. And I don't think it's going to end very soon.
Jelani Cobb with The New Yorker, thanks so much.
Thank you.
You can hear a lot more from Jelani Cobb on some of the history leading up to this moment in sports activism. He's featured in a new documentary from the team at Retro Report, made in partnership with The New Yorker. It's called The Black Athlete in America. We've been asking you what moments in sports resonated with you, for good or bad, in 2017.
Hi, this is Joanne from Wallingford, Pennsylvania. What resonated for me was when players took the knee. Like it or not, it's their First Amendment right to do so, and I hated it when they were criticized for doing that. I thought it was a very respectful way to protest.
Well, not all of you are in favor of mixing politics and sports. From Pearl River, New York, I understand the good intentions and temptation people feel to use such a public platform, but I don't think being a celebrity automatically imparts special wisdom on how the world works. Well, I'll say this. Women athletes in America had something to say about how the world works. 2017 was remarkable in a lot of ways, and for me, one huge standout was when the champion athletes of U.S. women's soccer and hockey both protested unequal pay, refused to play, and got new, fairer contracts. We always want to hear from you. Give us a call, 8778-MY-TAKE. You can tweet us at The Takeaway. I'm at Todd Zwillick. You can always find me on Twitter as well. This is The Takeaway.